Our synthesis is such a way in motion, let's go motion. When I go to group, when I came in here, I thought it was air. Only fine shit represents the light of air. So I realized it's not a boot.
We also look at it in terms of what prevail as the various divisions of the organization were engaging to formulate this plan, as well as the board interaction. The plan is informed or underpinned by the government policy formulations, the NDP, the NDP, the IPEP, and the mid-term framework. We believe that as a small business, we've got a significant role to play for both SMEs and corporations in these countries in terms of creating jobs to alleviate the challenges that we face of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And we believe that our plan comes up with innovative and creative ideas on how we can be able to address the challenges that we face in the nation. This presentation was prepared at a time where, in terms of the funding availability from the FICA, we are anticipating a reduction in particular from the MCF program, a reduction which is largely done through the ACFP, our what we call the economic competitive support program, where there's going to be a significant reduction of about 200 million year on year from 2016-2017. As a result of this, this will then compel us to really manage our costs effectively, to contain our salary bills among others, to look at operating expenses that we have, and then they need to reduce the level of impairment, the non-performing loans in our portfolio, and they will also identify the need to aggressively look at our product portfolio, utilizing this as one area where we can be able to really have additional income. Aggressively, we'll be able to look at the collection and turn around the portfolio. And then the management of our revenue is one that will end up in this plan, which we can align with the department. Just to really highlight in terms of the alignment, the department has got three strategic outcomes, roles. And the first one is talked about the need to, for effective and efficient administration from our side. We believe that we need to build a SIFA, build an institution that is financially sustainable so that we can be able to do more as required in terms of our mandate for the development of SMEs and cooperatives through provision finance. To improve our financial strength, the soundness of our financial position, efficient and effective institution in terms of systems, best practice, and also building a high performance culture within our institution. I'll show you in detail in terms of the specific program in this area. The other area relates to the every environment for cooperative, small business, cooperative, and cooperatives, where from a side we believe that we need to be able to provide access to finance and support to informal and micro enterprises, working through our direct lending, which is our branch network, the facilitate program that we have within our direct wholesale lending portfolio, as well as the utilization of our the team through our company called Pula Credit Guarantee. So that we'll be able to do more in terms of what is for small business. Sustainable small business and cooperative and rural and township communities from outside, we believe we need to be able to really assist businesses that are owned and managed by black people, businesses that are owned by women, businesses that are owned by young people, businesses that are in rural areas, as well as businesses that are owned by people who are living with disabilities. And in our program, this regard will be largely the footprint that we have throughout the country to ensure that we reach this priority area in terms of our funding activities. Just as I said at the beginning, in terms of really just to give the base in terms of where we come from, the organization is just over 3 years old. What we've done over the years, we have approved 2.5 billion rand in terms of our funding activities, of which 2.1 billion rand over the period 2012-2015 was disbursed into the economy. And we have assisted over 115,000 SMEs and cooperatives. The outcome of this is a job that has been created and sustained to an extent of 234,000 over this period of the existence of the institution. I bring this in the next slide just to really indicate in terms of as we plan going forward, where do we come from? Just to highlight in this slide number 8, in terms of the activities we have done, particularly in the informal and micro-enterprises, where we have assisted over 118,000 informal and micro-enterprises, and then this amount to $462 million over this period. And then we'll continue to really look at our targeted grouping as we move forward. This is just the base in terms of where we come from, and then where we want to go in terms of assisting various targeted areas that we have identified as an institution. Just briefly, in terms of our SWAT analysis, in terms of the strength of the institution, we believe that we are a unique institution that is with a support and is with a relevant mandate to really provide support to small businesses and corporations. And then we are an institution that we believe we've got adequate systems that can be able to really handle the growth trajectory of our institution in terms of our system, which is called CIFAS, which is the loan management system. It's one that we see as one of the crucial products that we have as an institution. We've got a national footprint, and the potential to really expand in a number of areas.
Weaknesses that we see ourselves is in terms of inability to handle the volume of various transactions that come in from time to time, the demand from SMEs and corporations for our activities, the limited due diligence capacity internally, particularly on the complex transactions. We are largely having a contract-based expertise, but we need to be able to expand into complex transactions as we move forward. And then limited level of talent in certain areas that we have identified internally, the level of correction that is also a challenge, if you see that as a weakness, which is underpinned by the element of capacity constraint, which is largely as a result of the merger of the erstwhile institutions. However, with all these weaknesses and strength, there are also opportunities that we have identified. We have seen that there are opportunities for us really to be able to leverage on the opportunities for small businesses in the private and public sector. In terms of the support that needs to be provided, the reach in terms of market that we can be able to really support, but so we will address the challenges that the country is facing. We need to be able to expand in other sectors that can be able to provide or promote growth and high level of employment, access to best practices with other, to engage with other institutions that have got a developmental agenda where we can be able to do a bit more. We also see opportunities, particularly on the activities from other state-owned entities, as well as the IBCO can be able to tap into for small business, identify opportunities where we can be able to provide the funding. The threat that we see ourselves externally relates to inability for us to meet stakeholder expectations from the portfolio committee, from the executive authority, from the shareholder, national treasury, etc. In terms of what we do, we see that as ordinarily the stress that prevails in our space. The delivery model that we have in terms of particularly the pricing from the intermediary's point of view, the element of inability to clients for clients to pay back the loan, and from the element of them thinking that the funding coming from the DFI will not necessarily be prioritized in terms of payment. We see it as a threat, and there's a need also for the institution to, because the funding are not there. We don't have unlimited resources. There are limited funds available to capitalize off or to be able to let us do what we should do to be able to make a significant impact. Ours we see as a balancing act. We need to be able to drive development of SMEs and corporations for the provision of finance in the country. But at the same time, we need to be able to manage the risk. We need to be able to manage the risk that the money that we have put out there, we need to be able to collect the money. We need to have the necessary skills internally, the financial in terms of collection, and then for us to be able to really commercially deliver on what our customers are expecting out there. So SFA is really a balancing act between the need to development, but at the same time, the need to sustain ourselves as an institution for us to be able to do more. Our strategic objectives really look largely in terms of the access to finance, access to credit that we need to provide to the informal and micro enterprise sector. We identify the direct lending as one area we need to be able to consolidate as we move forward to be able to do more to our clientele. The programs in the wholesale from accompanying them with interaction with our strategic partners. The guarantee scheme that I have indicated through our collaborative guarantee, we see this as an area where we will be able to utilize the uptake by the commercial bank and non-financial institutions. And then building our systems, improving the financial capabilities, customer base, and then also to build a performance-driven institution so that we can be able to really concentrate on what is required by our customers. And as a result, we need to be able to build a culture of passion, among others, of development. And in terms of just briefly again, just to unpack what we're saying, we're going to be doing from our strategic programs, access to finance, SMEs and cooperatives. Herein we are looking at informal and micro enterprise credit, which I will unpack, the direct lending, indirect business through our wholesale, the cooperative enterprise lending, the insurance company that we have. I also want to build an effective and efficient FIFA through financial management of our resources that we have. Capabilities within our human capital need to be enhanced. The IT system that we have to improve our reporting on what we have done, the outcome of our activities by improving our IT system. We need to be able to really go out there and increase our marketing to the stakeholders so that they are aware that this agency of government has got funding that can be able to assist in changing the lives of our people. Again, by doing this, we need to cover the area of risk and governance. We also have to manage our portfolio from time to time. In particular, in instances where the clients are having challenges, we can be able to really resuscitate them and bring them to instances where they can be able to grow and expand their operations. And as I said, property management is regard to our property portfolio. From here on, I'm going to really be undertaking the programs that we have. Program 1 relates to the access to finance. It has got a number of sub-programs in terms of what are we going to be doing in terms of the what we call the access to finance to SMEs and cooperatives. Program 1.1 relates to the informal and the micro-enterprise credit that we want to really provide, continue to provide informal sectors to the micro-enterprises, the survivalists, and particularly those that are operating in the rural and peri-urban area through access to funding activities. We need to be able to do this through partnership, both private and public sector partnerships that we need to build on the informal and micro-enterprises. We also need to have a dedicated focus on areas where we have identified as it has been underserved, particularly in rural areas and in other provinces that there are less activities. We also identify the need for us to support the MFIs, the microfinance institutions that subscribe to our developmental agenda to grow, in particular to assist in areas where we do not currently have a presence. And then we have also identified that there are opportunities in the space of the food produce market. We are running pilots, I'll share with you as we move on in terms of some of the areas that we have identified. One of the examples just to illustrate from the micro and enterprise informal sector is where we have identified the food produce market as one of the areas where we can be able to assist informal sectors and micro enterprise where they can be able to source goods from our fresh produce markets in the country by them getting access to credit. We are piloting this at the moment in Durban and in Manaung fresh produce markets, and we need to be able to roll out across the country where we engage and we look at this fresh produce market that can be able to help us to sustain the businesses of informal and the micro enterprises. We also identify the need to really strengthen the purchasing power of the informal sector through these markets. We will also look at what technology can be used, particularly some of the loyalty cards, for them to be able to really get the funding or access to credit from these markets. By so doing, we believe we're going to be empowering them to really be able to do more in terms of their activities. I just thought I'd just share with you in the next slide in terms of this particular case of of the pilot that we have done in Mangaung, which is what we're going to be able to replicate going forward in other areas. I just thought by sharing this to be able to give the members in terms of snippets of what we are looking at in terms of rolling out elsewhere. We have already approved a facility on the Durban Mangaung Fresh Produce Market pilot project. This is a facility of about 24.5 million, where we're going to be able to provide what we call the affordable credit to the informal traders through this market. There will be, in terms of management of this market, CIFA will be able to implement and facilitate this this program. The project, in essence, really will look at affordable credit, where the informal sectors or informal traders will be able to get loans in anything between 500 and 10,000, which will be available as those that are successful applicants. And then if they can be able to really manage their facilities that they get, and they pay well, they're doing the repayment, it will evolve from time to time, and then the traders that are successful will only be able to purchase at this fruit producer market. And the project would then involve the training that's needed to, in terms of really enhancing their entrepreneurship, the issue around financial management, which is crucial, food packaging and storage, and then after being successful, then be able to really look at how we can impact this in other areas. So we believe that this is one of the groundbreaking opportunities that we need to really, be able to look at as we move forward by way of example. How much are we then allocating to the program on the informal and micro enterprises? We are saying we would like to, for 2016-2017, to look at approval of 97 million in terms of the approval in this area, where over a period of 5 years, in total over 5 years, we believe we would have approved 592 million. To the informal and micro enterprise sector. Money has to go into the economy by way of disbursements. There is always a lag between approval and disbursement, largely due to certain conditions that need to be met, conditions precedents that need to be met, the signing of agreements, etc. We anticipate that through our approval for 97 million, we'll be able to disburse 53 million to the informal and micro enterprise sector in 2016-2017, and over a period of 5 years, that will amount to 402.5 million. And then by doing this, it's going to be done through assist in terms of our model. We run 46,200 enterprises will be supported, which translates to over 282 in over 5 years. These funding activities in terms of the outcome that we envisage is the ultimate goal of job creation. And we believe that our funding will be able to facilitate in this program or sub-program the creation of the sustenance of 69,300 jobs, and then which over a period of 5 years, we have a total of about 423,000 in this space. The next program is we call it the direct lending program, where we utilize our branch network. We have got offices throughout the country, where clients will be able to go into these offices and be funded anything between 50,000 and 5 million. What we have identified in this area, which is one of the areas particularly from the level of impairments, which is on the high side, we have identified the need now that to consolidate in this area, where we'll then be able to review our credit policies and investment guidelines. How can we be able to tighten responsibly in terms of making sure that we improve our due diligence activities in terms of the quality, and in terms of making sure that we are able to do the assessment, in particular the complex type of transaction. And we believe that we need to be able to partner with the local chambers, the local municipalities, district municipalities in this area. We have identified the need to differentiate. Largely over the past 3 years, as we start, it was one size fits all. Our investment officers, basically our deal makers, anybody can be able to just do any particular dealing, whatever product. We believe that the need for us to do a differentiated, a complex transaction, for example, the non-contract financing can be done by level of staff that have the certain expertise. We also identify from a government point of view there are a lot of opportunities from a state side where in this area we can be able to allocate the resources internally in terms of human resources to be able to look at this transition. We have also identified the initiative that has been launched by our sister agency CIDA together with the department on the Gazelle, National Gazelle Program. We see this as an opportunity where we're going to be able to assist clients or small businesses that are already been, the number of work has been done, the basic assessment has been conducted by various role players in this space. We see this really as a pipeline for us as we move forward. We have done a lot, and we have not done a lot over the years in the area of businesses that are owner-managed by people with living disabilities. And then with this, it cannot just be business as usual for us to be able to wait for them to come to us to request the funding. We have identified a need to develop what we call the dedicated schemes. The financing scheme where, for example, say we are putting aside about 20 to 30 million over a particular period, and this funding will then be able to be having a dedicated, a low level or what I can call a very discretionary interest rate and fee, and then until the all the money that we allocate is taken up. And we believe by bringing up this innovative scheme, they will be able to really increase the take-up as we engage also with the role players and associations for people living with disabilities. We have also, as I indicated earlier, identified the opportunities as we engage with DFIs and other SOEs, particularly in the area of localization and value chain development. And we believe our direct lending program will be able to assist in driving in this area, identify new innovative solutions for us to be able to do more of our funding activities to SMEs and cooperatives. The next slide, slide 19, just illustrate in terms of what is it that then we allocate this. I mentioned at the beginning that our funding will be, there will be a reduction of 200 million year on year going forward as a result of the end of time for ECSP program, where we usually receive about 400 million odd, and this will be a reduction of about 200 million. As compared, for example, what we anticipate 2015-2016 of about 536 million, it will be like a half when we go into 2016-2017, because when we plan, we say we're planning in terms of the resources that we believe we have already at the back, which are outlined as we move along. The 229 million, so this really program will largely be a consolidation, but at the same time we'll be able to identify those opportunities, the low-hanging fruits that we can be able to look at. 229 million in 2016-2017 in anticipation in terms of approval, and then over a period of 5 years, we believe that will translate to over 2 billion in terms of approval. The disbursements, again, you see as compared to the base of 2015-2016, there's also going to be a 200 or million reduction, but we'll be able to ramp up again as we move into the outer years, and we anticipate disbursement of 212 million in 2016-2017, and then the money that's going to go into the economy, we anticipate about 1.9 billion. And this is a result of us anticipating to assist 163 enterprises in 2016-2017, which will translate to about 1.452 over a period of 5 years. And in terms of the job facilitation in this program, we anticipate 817 job facilitation in terms of creation as well as sustained, and then of 7,258. Over a period of five years in this program. The next program is the wholesale small and micro enterprise lending program, where in this case we are saying we need to be able to really diversify our partners that we utilize from time to time to deliver funding to our clientele. In this case, we have identified the need to really introduce new instruments. In particular, when we fund largely on a debt instrument, it makes their structure very, very weak. Their debt equity ratio become high, and we see the need to really introduce some of the programs in terms of the quasi-equity, the equity instrument. We have also put together internally what we call a structured finance solution. That is when, as we engage with this committee and then come here, then we learn in terms of opportunities and area where we can be able to go in. We have a team within the division that can then be able to put together various programs that can be able to be structured with a link between wholesale as well as direct lending. Some of them is where we structured it, but in terms of individual clients, it's in our direct lending portfolio. This is one of the areas where we will be able to do more, where we say, let's be innovative, let's identify opportunities, let's create, let's build the structures, funding solutions for us to be able to really look at ways of how to structure the transaction. And then there is a fund called the Isibande Women's Fund. It's currently managed by IBC. That is going to be transferred into CIFA for us to manage. We have also identified that we need to really increase activities in the number of areas that we have identified. Some of them will be the agricultural value chain with particular focus on grain farming, poultry farming, and the greenhouse. There are such a number of opportunities. I will really unpack more. This is just of the example. I will unpack some of the areas we have also identified in this space for us to be able to do more in terms of our funding. We also need to establish a fund in the enterprise and the supplier development fund, where we partner with the private sector to be able to really build this fund, grow it, and then some of these institutions that partner with us can be able to really qualify for their Ruby ES core card by way of an example. We are in this program for 2016-2017, anticipate to approve 248 million. And the disbursement of about 163 million. And then if I look at disbursement in the outer years, the total we anticipate about 1.3 billion rand. And then 216 SME will be supported. And then 1,315 over a period of 5 years. And then this will be able to help in terms of job creation. 1,000 jobs anticipated in 2016-2017, a total of about 6,500. Over a period of 5 years. The other area I will really dwell a lot in this area will be we can give some of the key examples. It's on the area of cooperative enterprise lending program, where we believe that we need to be able to increase our funding activities to cooperative enterprises. But so we will be able to really increase the economic participation, especially among women, youth, and rural communities. And we are looking at investing and building cooperative financial institutions and stockpiles to contribute to the area of financial inclusion in our country. We also identify the need really to support and invest in enterprising cooperatives. This area in terms of what we're looking at from a product offering point of view, where we provide business loans. I did mention already structured finance solutions, which we're going to put together, particularly looking at the area of value chain, vertical and horizontal. We also identify the cooperative financial institutions, the CFIs, as well as the secondary cooperative in terms of where we can be able to partner in this area with regard to on-lending facilities. We also identify the needs to really, from a cooperative infrastructure program point of view, where CIFA will be able to do co-funding of activities within the private sector as well as including the municipalities. CIFA will provide business loans to the municipalities, and the minister will also be able to accompany that or augment that with grants and the other support that they will provide. And then we are also looking at what we call the 80-20 cooperative placement facility, where there is a co-funding model, where CIFA is providing the bulk of the funding, but will also be able to partner with the municipalities and local and district and metros as well. I will be able to share with you by way of example in this area. We're also looking at what we call the inter-agency cooperative facility 50-50, a partnership facility between CIFA and other state agencies, whose mandate is really to provide funding to cooperatives. In this area, each will be able to contribute a level of 50% and non-lending facility, also augmented by the 5% business support for mentoring program, which is crucial, as well as training and bookkeeping activities. Just again, just to unpack in this area, we said we would not be able to really come up with this sector focus funds through a partnership, and then the area of waste recycling that we have looked at, the area of agricultural producing activities. The grant would then be able to be support. We are going to give grant if there is no online funding. So where there is grant, is also where there is also a funding facility that we have provided. So grant will just be really augmenting the loan facility. So we are looking at from a key investment perspective on the DFI to provide these funding packages. We're also looking at the pre-investment where we collaborate with our sister agency FIDA in terms of helping on the scoping of the various transactions, and we also need to manage the transactions once the funding has been disbursed, particularly looking at the technical support and with our partners. And I did mention about the quasi-equity instrument that we are anticipating to really provide to really help to strengthen the balance sheet. Slide number 25, in terms of the cooperative value chain model, in this model we are looking at really ourselves together with secondary cooperatives entering into a loan agreement which will cater for the business loans and the support grants, wherein the secondary cooperative will be responsible for the allocation of business loans initially to its members, the cooperatives, and as well as looking at the payment of the loans to SIFA as we interact and engage with them. The secondary cooperative will also be responsible for the area of access to market through marketing to their marketing members' products and the services, also negotiating the offtake agreements, basically the access, market access with the buyers such as government and other buyers. Management also in terms of the development of shared infrastructure such as the distribution and centers for bulk buying will be the responsibility of the secondary cooperatives. Some of the benefits that we have identified as a result of this value chain model is an area that will unpack really the bulk buying, value chain, value adding and processing, fund mobilization we have identified, marketing of the member product, as I said, in terms of arranging the off-take agreement, business support, financial management, the tax computation, the bookkeeping aspect, etc., we name them, as well as the infrastructure in terms of operation and maintenance. The sectors that we have identified, amongst others, include the waste recycling projects for solid waste. We have identified the agriculture production in terms of the produce. Poultry is one area that we've identified, high volume crop, the ground nuts, services sectors, particularly looking at the bakeries, the school feeding scheme, the retail stores. We have identified the infrastructure opportunities. One critical area that we have also identified is the opportunity that is prevailing within the state with regard to the public procurement cooperatives. So you see this really, the state provides a mechanism for cooperatives really to be able to start to grow their businesses, their cooperative enterprises. We're also looking at now opportunities in this area, particularly on the food processing opportunities. There is a need in this country that there has to be a provision of food security. This we look at from maize, maize meal, that we need to be able to have a cooperative that can be able to produce this produce. Maize meal, the sorghum, from a textile point of view, also within the textile and agriculture, we're also looking at the clothing aspects that can be able to be generated where the cooperatives can form their enterprises in the clothing area, in the linen, school uniform. We also look at uniform in the prisons and other areas. We also identify in the wood and paper space, particularly around the need to have furniture, in particular furniture that is used in schools. There are a number of low-cost housing that are being built on a regular basis, which we do finance through our direct lending program. And there will be cooperatives that require the money to be able to really manufacture the doors and the door frames. You look at the roof tiles. There are also opportunities in the area of toilet paper because the market is huge. Hospitals, you name them, you name the prisons as well. In the area of energy, I mean the production of charcoal production, there's also the need to be able to really look at what we'll be able to do with some of our indigenous plants and activities, the lead that we have in the country in order to really have a production of in the area of particularly women where the cosmetic industry can also be strived in terms of what can be done through the interaction with the cooperatives. So really the public sector market is huge. I mean we identify particularly if you look at the construction space, there's also in the area of particularly during the time of heavy rains, the need to be able to repair the potholes, there's a need to do road maintenance in some of the roads in most of the areas, particularly the rural area are gravel that needs to be maintained from time to time. So cooperatives, we believe they can be able to really be able to form their enterprises to be able to assist in identifying these opportunities and tap into the public sector procurement to also look in terms of other areas, particularly the rural areas and the issue of sanitation. I mean, there is in certain areas of our country, in the first place, the eradication of the bagger system is required, so the cooperative us can be able to really tap into these opportunities and the maintenance of the various special sites. So we, while here on the slide, we have just maybe emphasized on some of the opportunities for the private sector, the public sector really provides a huge opportunity. And us as a government agency that provides the funding, we really need to be to play a significant role in this area and then to be really an industry role player in terms of provision of finance because there are a number of opportunities in terms of jobs that can be able to be created in this area. I did mention the need for us to really interact and collaborate with the municipalities. Really to be able to illustrate this to the honorable members, I just thought I should just really share with you some of the examples in terms of what we have already done with some of the municipalities and which is really a snippet of what we need to be doing as we move forward. We have, for example, a partnership with the Dr. Kenneth Kaunda District municipalities in the area of waste recycling for cooperatives. In this area, we have identified that there is a need to provide finance. We have approved 25 million to 8 waste recycling cooperatives. The acquisition of equipment for waste recycling and also a working capital facility. The Dr. Kenneth Kaunda will provide a grant. That's where the partnership that I spoke about, where when we partner with the municipalities, they provide the grant facilities to finance the existing and the renovation of some of these facilities. Renovation and extension. The 8 cooperatives will then form a secondary cooperative which will own a waste recycling plant, which is very, very crucial. And they will be able to jointly responsible to operate such a plant. Each cooperative will operate a waste collection center as well and in turn deliver the waste to the sorting and baling plant. Once sorted and baled at the plant, the waste will then be sold to, in this case, the off-taker, being a Neopark. In terms of the offtake agreement between a secondary cooperative and a new park. And there's also a need for the refurbishment of the existing building, which has already commenced. Two contractors have been appointed by the municipality to really be able to do this this work. And by so doing, we believe it's going to be able to go a long way in creating 320 jobs. In the case army, we also identify the needs, and we have partnered in this case with the case Ani Cooperative Development Center, where CIFA has approved 9.6 million for 2 incubation sites, which involve in the cash crop production, called Indalo and Lukanji, a secondary cooperative to cover really the operational and the other CAPEX. The 18 primary cooperatives are members of the 2 secondary cooperatives. Our technical partner here is being Incorp, which will also facilitate through the market marketing access for the secondary cooperatives, and they will be responsible for the repayment of the CIFA loan. And the incubation entity in this area, together with our strategic partners in the area, will really be able to help us to really do more in this area in the Eastern Gate. So these are really some of the activities that we entered into, and this one in particular, I believe 32 jobs will be created as a result of this. The other number of some of these, I show this one as an example, just to illustrate when we are saying this is what we want to do into poverty going forward, which we haven't really been done. We didn't have much penetration in the past, and we believe we can be able to do more. The other area where we have identified, especially on slide number 30, where we are interacting with the Super Grant Partnership, which is going to be able to assist the cooperatives in Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. 26 jobs will be created, and the CIVA has then put approved the 20 million loan facility for to fund four primary cooperatives that are involved in the chicken broiling activities. And the Super Grant is playing as a technical partner in this case. And then five cooperatives, 400 by CIVA, will provide manpower with broiler houses that currently accommodate about 40,000 chickens. This is really one of what we are anticipating to do in the face of cooperatives. So the opportunities are there. I think for us, through our structured planning solution that I indicated, that we need to be able to build more and roll this out to a number of areas that have identified. The poverty nodes have been identified to be able to really bring an environment there that the cooperative can be able to thrive, and also do it. They are addressing the challenges to get employed, the poverty get eradicated in this particular area. And the other one is also on the feeding scheme, by buying activities. I won't really go into detail where we believe that no 30 jobs will be maintained. 50 million facility has been put in place. And then accounting Department of Education schools in terms of our partnership in this case. There are quite a number of other activities that we have identified. We are collaborating, for example, with the military veterans. We have engaged with them on a number of occasions where we believe that they have a number of very sustainable projects that we need to be able to finance and be able to make a meaningful impact and creating jobs in the communities in which they live. So, as I said, these are just really some of the examples that we put forward. Slide 32, really, I won't really go into detail, just really to unpack, like, summarizing some of the activities that we have undertaken in this regard. This is how we are allocating in terms of the fund for this program going forward. Slide number 33, where we are looking at the cooperative financial institutions, basically like a mini cooperative bank, where the base is low, it's 1 million, because they provide funding to their members on a very small scale, maybe 80,000, 100,000, etc. We're looking at 2016-2017 at 2.5 million, and a total over 5 years of 33.5 million. And in terms of the approvals of the respective cooperatives, we're looking at 50 million in 2016-2017, and then to be able to grow and over a period of 5 years, 375 million. And 33.5 million is anticipated to be spent, and then we are also going to be able to assist cooperative enterprises, the tune of 95 of them in 2016-2017, and then where the total of our road is 583. Our ultimate outcome being the creation of jobs and the creation of jobs and sustenance of jobs, 760 we anticipate in 2016-2017, and then 4,662 over a period of for 5 years in total. The other program within the program number one, which is basically the last program of program number one of access to finance to SMEs and cooperatives. Herein is where we utilize, as I said, our Pula Kelly Guarantee company to really collaborate with banks and non-banks to really provide access to finance if the clients of banks that we see as our clients ultimately for some reason, particularly maybe difficult market conditions, and if they have got a challenge in terms of inability to service the loan, we can be able to indemnify the banks anything between 60% and 50% and 90%. We want to really extend this to a wider range of financial institutions and not only the commercial bank. The uptake of this program since it started in the days of Kula has been very sluggish of late, although there was a boom at certain stage around 2008-2009. And then we need to be able to come up with solutions in this area where we can be able to do more impact. And this is also going to look at piloting some of the programs that we identified, and then looking at how best we can be able to let this being utilized. Because we are seeing, because banks and other institutions have got a wider network, they can be able to help us really to reach our clientele in large numbers. In this case, approvers is where we have approved a facility, for example, to a financial institution. And then approval of the financial institution, the institution has pledged to disburse the funding to the end user in terms of those that went to financial institutions like banks to ask for funding. And then, should there be any challenge in terms of non-repayment, and the bank has to prove that yes, indeed, they were not negligent in terms of their activities, we can then be able, they can be able to claim in terms of the indemnity from ourselves. And through this program, we are hope to assist about 381 in 2016-2017, and 12,200 over a period of 5 years in total. And then 1,905 jobs are anticipated to be created, and 61,000 in total in 5 years. These are program one was really more in terms of our interaction, which is a key program in terms of activities. The next program is the management of our portfolio, where we manage our loan book so that we can be able to recoup and be able to do more. We need to be able to visit clients. I say to the team, even if the client is paying, they need to be able to visit the client. There might be opportunities for additional funding to the client we have, where clients might require to grow and expand the operation. We can also identify early warning signals in terms of the portfolio, where there are challenges that are, as they are come, we're going to be able to identify. We have what we call the investment monitoring committee that meets on a monthly basis, looking at each individual transaction, how the clients are doing, and then we need to be able to also look at restructuring through our workout and restructuring units, the clients that are beginning to come up with challenges. In other words, this, we call it like intensive care unit, where a client may have a difficulty in terms of repayment. In certain instances, we can restructure the facility, where, for example, we are saying, instead of paying 50,000 rand a month, maybe you can be able to pay 15 or 20,000 for an extended period of time. And then we also look at unlocking the mentorship, making it mentorship to be able to assist in collaboration with our sister agency, SIA. We also believe that we need to be able to enhance our system. Clients need to be able to know what's happening, not only for us in terms of producing the report for our stakeholders, but also for clients to be able to know where they are in terms of the balance in their account, the SMS, the facilities, etc. So these are some of the things that we are building in. In terms of the allocation in terms of what is this program entails, I just want to apologize in slide number 87. There's a column that is missing for 2020-2021. It's the same, it's literally the same as what we have on 2019-2021. We believe that we need to be able to manage our impairment down. Currently, our overall impairment is sitting at about 40 that anticipate for 2015-2016. We want to reduce this to about 29% in 2016-17, and it will stay at about 19% in 2020 and 2021. And the other is just more in terms of the activities, in terms of the level of non-performing loans, the status that we produce from time to time. The next program is the program number three, which is again more in terms of internally focused, likely so that we can be able to build our capacity to manage our resources, financial resources, to ensure sustainability of our institution, to enhance our human capital, which is key for us to be able to deliver on our mandate, building the culture of values system within the organization, improving our working environment for our team so that they can be able to do more in terms of assisting SMEs and cooperatives. And then one of the areas is really the IT system enhancement. Program number four, look in terms of the need for us to really build a strong and effective institution, the CIFA brand, where a number of people need to be aware in terms of what we offer. This is the area where we need to be able to continue to engage with existing and potential SMEs and cooperatives for them to be aware that our institution is a funder of choice for small businesses in this country. We need to be able to increase our access points. We identify the facilities within the LEDs of municipalities where clients can be able to assist it. The co-location with our sister agencies, CEDA and others. We need to be able to roll out this access point for people to be aware that yes, we are there to be able to assist. But looking at opportunities in township and rural areas, and again to develop the culture of excellence as we engage with the client, is also in terms of how to address the issue of red tape, among others, in terms of how quickly we interact with the client. The property portfolio, as I said, this is the area where we've identified the need really to look at our properties. We need to see our properties as a way to generate additional income. Some of these properties have back many years ago. We identified the need to really revamp. We have collaborated, for example, currently with the Gauteng government that has offered to renovate and refurbish some of our properties for no consideration to FIFA. And we believe that these properties are really indeed an asset to maintain with regard to making sure that the SMEs and corporates will have a space to look at. I think engaging with my team, there's one property that we have, for example, in Atlanta, which we want to also turn into an industrial park, where we'll be able to subdivide it and then identify opportunities for corporates really to utilize the facilities that we have. They need to revamp some of these properties that we have. There are properties that have been in dispute, only those properties that have been in dispute, and then in terms of sale and sale of the properties that date back many years in the 80s, particularly with the Gauteng Property Associations as well as the Orlando West Property Association. We have taken this through our board system. We have identified that these properties need to be sold, as it were, to this tenant based on certain criteria that we sell. But the rest of the properties will remain, so that we'll be able to sort this dispute that date back so many years. And then we'll be able to look at interacting with other areas in government. We'll interact, for example, with the Department of Public Works to manage a certain portion of some government properties. And we see that it's one of the areas where we can look at how commonly together we can be able to maximize optimally utilize these properties from management point of view as we move forward. The next slide really now just translates all the sub-slides that are provided in terms of our programs. Where are we in terms of the consolidating all these activities? Here we just really look largely on the approvals and disbursements. We are projecting about 1.1 billion rand in 2016-2016 and disbursement of around 883 million, which we already surpassed that. In terms of the 2016-2017, which are again driven by the resources, that it will not have much going forward because of the 200 million that I spoke about. We anticipate to approve 884 million and it's based over 700 million in the 2016-2017 financial year. And the total over 5 years in terms of approval, about 6.9 billion and 6.5 billion will be divided into the economy. Next slide talks about in terms of the area of impact in terms of jobs that are as a result of the number of SMEs and cooperatives that we anticipate to finance 47,000 in 2016-2017 and the number of jobs that facilitate about 72,000. And we anticipate that over a period of 5 years, 297 small businesses and cooperatives will be supported. And then this will then result in the job facilitation and creation and sustenance of 497, just under 500,000 over the next 5 years. The next slide relates to the developmental impact, where in terms of the funding, we are saying 70% of our funding has to go to businesses that are owned by black people. And we are projecting for 2016-2017 about 492 million, which will then be about, in the year 2020-2021, about 1.3 billion in terms of disbursement. These are disbursement-based. Businesses that are owned and managed by women, we allocate 45% of all our disbursements have to go to businesses that are owned and managed by women. We are anticipating 316 million in 2016-2017 and then 850 in 5 years' time. Young people own enterprises. We will anticipate 211 million in 2016-2017, 556 million in 2020-2021. Township as well, anticipating 460 in 2020-2021. In the crisis owned by living with disability, this is the area where I said about the scheme that we're going to be putting in place to be able to really have more activities. We allocate 2% in this area as a minimum. 14 million anticipated to be dispersed in 2016-2017 and 37.8 million in 2020-2029. Enterprise local located in provinces. In this area, going forward, we will engage with my team. We need to be able to stratify this between rural provinces, align fully with the department, rural-based enterprises. What we have here is the rural priority provinces, which basically all provinces excluding Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal. But we are aware that these provinces also have, the provinces that I've mentioned also have rural areas. So what we're going to be able to do going forward in this particular targeted group, we will stratify it further to say specifically relating to the rural enterprises, how many rural enterprises are funded, and then which ones are in a priority province. So in other words, a further breakdown in that particular targeted group. Disbursement to enterprises value less than 500,000. This is very, very crucial. This, as I said, we provide funding up to 5 million. But for us to be able to have so many SMEs and cooperatives, we also have to look at the smaller ones, the ones that are looking for money less than 500,000. So we put this as part of our deliverables to ensure that we also provide more of the activities. So the impact can also be significantly high in this area where people are looking for the 50,000 range, the 100,000, the 200, and then this one can help us really to drive the activities in this area. The next slide as proceed is what we call, we measure ourselves through the Auditor General and the through the firm of auditors that are, they do the audits on his own behalf of the Auditor General in terms of the balance scorecard. That what have you done in the various perspectives, for example, from a customer point of view, from a financial point of view, internal business processes and people and learning. Access to finance, we see, is really take the biggest chunk of activities. 50% of the weight of our activities goes to the access to finance, which is basically the program, largely the program number one of our program that I highlighted earlier. We anticipate in total the approval of 884 million and the 704 million as a disbursement. You will see here that the disbursement have a biggest chunk in terms of the weight allocation, because we believe that it doesn't help just to approve and money doesn't go into the economy. We must approve and we must disburse. Then we have allocated the higher way so that if we do not do a lot in terms of disbursement, we get penalized in terms of the balance scorecard. We have also identified that we need to focus our activities on the growth, high growth sector in terms of IPED, the NGP, the National Development Plan, etc., where we are seeing 40% of our loan approvals has to go to this productive industrial sector that has got more impact. And the number of jobs, the number of SMEs and corporates that needs to be assisted, and you also see the breakdown, I won't go into detail in terms of youth, priority, rural provinces. I said that this is one area we're going to be able to break down as we move forward, and the black-owned enterprises in terms of the allocation. It's also crucial for us to say what we do. What is it the customers are saying of what we do and what we offer from time to time? We have, in this case, picked up the need for us to be independently assessed by our customers. It's either the customer that receives funding from our institution, the customer that has been rejected in terms of them having asked for funding from our institution, for them to be able to do survey as to how they are satisfied or not with our services to them. One area from the financial perspective is for us to be able to manage, is we balance the need for development, but at the same time, balance the need of, from a management of funding point of view to sustain ourselves. We see here, excluding impairments and the finance charges, we have got a target of 157% cost to income ratio, which is commendable for the for a development finance institution, which we have allocated a higher weight in this area. Impairment cumulatively going forward, we are looking at 29% as highlighted in one of the slides, and they also need to be able to grow in interest and fees so that we can be able to sustain ourselves. One of the areas as we interact with clients is the issue of the time it takes to get money from our institution. So we build this as a part of the balance scorecard, where we are saying if it's a bridging loan, it must be 20 working days. If it is a term loan, it must be 30 working days. The wholesale funding where we do partnership, the transaction has to be executed within 45 working days. And the other three to other systems, because we believe for us to be able to continue to do more activities, our systems have to be robust. We have to have adequate automation in place. The next slide, page number 46, look at the area of turnover, staff turnover. We are looking at labor turnover about 7%. And then employees also have to assess how we do our work. It's also going to be done by independently in terms of 70% satisfaction index in terms of how we're doing things, and also in terms of their growth of development, competencies, and due diligence activities. Because we need to continuously learn to be able to do more, particularly in areas of cooperatives, where we need to be able to really improve the assessment, the capabilities inside, and then an indicator of 80% minimum is required in this space. I just want to conclude by just highlighting in terms of the financial position and as well as the financial performance of FIFA going forward. I indicated that we're going to be continuing under a difficult market condition in terms of limited resources available. Then we need to be able to really manage our resources responsibly, effectively, and efficiently. While we know that our estimate goal is to really address the challenges that the country is facing. Being a development finance institution, we do not anticipate to make a profit, but we need just to be able to sustain ourselves. We believe that number 2020-2021, as we grow and reflows from the money that we've paid out, we'll be able to start to break even as an institution. And then this also includes for us to be able to decrease impairments, especially in the direct lending operation. We also need to be able to look at downscaling, largely as a result of lack of business funding, but at the same time, to really consolidate in this space. And we then build on the products and on the other areas of structured finance solutions, among others, the cooperative areas will be as an area of growth while we consolidate and collect in this area of our business in the direct lending. And the headcount freezing in terms of our budget model, we are saying competence that we have, only when it's absolutely necessary, we'll be able to replace the key employees. But we want to maintain this as much as possible. We also want to see our property portfolio back even in 2020-2021. Slide number 48, which is basically our financial statement in terms of comprehensive income. Just to really illustrate in terms of what we anticipate, you will see our revenue line just on the top there is largely driven by the fees that we earn from the indemnity, as well as the interest on our funding activities, which the interest is really the biggest chunk of where we earn our revenue. The rental income we receive from the properties that we have, other investments and other income. We have one of our critical investments is the 22% holding we have in business partners. This is dated back many years during the time of SGDC when it was unbundled, and then the property that has been bought by taken up at the time by business partners resulted in our actual institution Kula having interest in the business. So we're sitting at 22%. We earn dividend of about 6 million rand year on year on our on our investment in business partners. And our expenses are largely driven by personnel expenses, as well as the portion of the movement in impairments and bad debts, where it drives our level of expenses. For this institution to continue to sustain and do more, will require a continuous grant to be provided. If you look at the bottom line, you'll see in 2016-20 forecast, we're anticipating a loss of about 1 million with an injection of grant of 406 million. But as I said, the 200 million of grants will be one of it going forward. You'll see 2017, 2018, and 2019. We will still be, we are projecting a loss, taking into account the level of grants that we receive. And then by 2020, 2029, the surplus we anticipate because of the grant funding. Our balance sheet will, in our view, remain reasonably sound going forward. We are sitting at the net assets of about 1.5 billion rand in terms of our forecast. We anticipate our balance sheet to be at a state of about 2.6 billion rand in 2020-2021. And that is basically slide 49/50. And then just to recap in terms of activities, I mean, the revenue, our revenue is largely from the, if we exclude the government grant, this is how we aim to really increase revenue. If you have to look for the next 2 years, by 45%, next 3 years, 45% in 3 years, and 103% in 5 years. If we include the government grant, the revenue is forecasted to really, if we include the grant, it's forecasted to decrease by 10% over the medium-term special framework in 3 years, driven by a decline largely in the ECP allocation, as I've mentioned, about of plus minus 200 million. And I think for us really to manage the cost down and to improve the level of employment. Slide 52 is very, very important. This is the slide that illustrates in terms of where our money is coming from. Where are all this money to do? All that I've mentioned above. The CIPA received the funding from the fiscus. In terms of the NGF allocation, as well as the CSP, Economic Competitive Support Program that I've mentioned, which is coming to an end. Just apologies, the slide on this slide 52, the second last column, 2015 year to date December, this should be 2015 financial year, but it's up to the year end March 2016. So basically it's 2016 if you have to put in terms of years, 2016 year to date. Né? So you see the IDC as a committed to provide us a total of 921 million. So by year 2018, we'll start tapping into the IBC coffers. Over the years, since the first establishment, Kula and some of had cash in banks. There also be flows on the investment that has been done in the past, which has been sustained in the institution, as well as the grant portion, the MTF, as well as ECFP. So when we do this budget, when we do this corporate plan, we align it with what we believe is available. So we focusing on base what has been committed and signed for. So we really require additional grants from state as we move forward to be able for us to be able to do more activities. We are looking at 350 million in 2019 from the IDC commitment, 250 in 2020, and 100 million in 2021. And this will also be augmented by the collections, the money that we have put out into the small businesses. We need to be able to get that money back. We are hoping that we will be able to receive this money in 2017, for example. We are anticipated to receive, to collect 484 million together with the MDF. It will give us a total of what is available of 647 million. So that is really the basis of our funding. The last slide is just really, I won't really go into this in detail, it will just illustrate some of operating expenses insofar as investment in properties and the movements in impairments are concerned. Honorable members, thank you very much. This is what I will present to share with you this morning. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Sorry for arriving late. I think that the presentation is very clear and very precise. We will break for 15 minutes, and thereafter we will engage in discussion and deliberation. Thank you. Thank you very much. We are now on the discussion, which would include comments from members. Where we are actually dealing with the stress plan of the department and the stress plan of FIFA. What we are doing, we are looking at how aligned is the FIFA plan to the is the FIFA strategic plan to the strategic plan of the department that was presented yesterday. And we will also do the same with data when we come to it. And we have a draft, it's still a draft, this document that has been distributed to members. Okay. It serves as a guide for issues that we need to be focusing on when we are actually asking questions. The most important aspect of this document is to understand key issues that are being addressed by the strategy plans that are being presented to us, and then as to what is being addressed by the department through that key performance area, key performance indicator. And then we also have to look on our side as to whether the department is responding to the issue that has been identified. If I were to make an example, the key issue for us in all the presentations that have been made and the research showed that the high rate of failure of cooperatives, which is 88%. And then what we'll be looking at, we will be looking at whether the department has identified key instruments and mechanisms to address the cooperative failure rate of 88%. That is what we will be looking at from the point of view of the portfolio committee. So when the department presents to us its strategic plan, the key issue that will be, one of the key issues that we'll be looking at is whether that strategic plan speaks to the 88% failure rate of cooperatives, and whether what has been put in place as a strategic plan and a key performance indicator is addressing that failure rate of 88%. Again, if I may make another example, there are reports that are saying there is 40% failure rate of SMEs in South Africa. And then the portfolio committee will then look at the strategic plan that is being presented by the department to identify whether the department has put instruments and mechanisms in place to address the NME failure rate of 40%. And then when we go then to our key performance indicators, we will then be looking at what is it that will enable us to see that the department is actually doing that. We will also be looking at what are the risks that would make it not possible for the department to achieve that the key performance indicator, even if they have identified it, and how we would then, as a portfolio committee, assist in mitigating that risk. So that is how we are going to be engaging from now onwards. We are not going to be asking a set of questions. We're going to be asking very specific questions that are related to the work that we need to be doing. And we'll be guided by the medium-term expenditure framework priorities. So even if it is a good a project to embark on, if it is a project that does not relate to the key performance, to the priority areas of the medium-term expenditure framework, you have to target and get it at another time. So that is going to be the approach. I will then open an opportunity for members to ask questions. Honorable Kruger, followed by Honorable Mabasa, followed by Honorable Laude, and followed by Honorable Chan, then Honorable Begwa. Those are the answers.
Thank you, Ma'am Chair, and thank you for this presentation. Very informative. Thank you. Ma'am Chair, yes, my question, I've got two questions. My question is about the high failure rate of small businesses in South Africa. That includes corporates and SMEs. But it's about the informal business owners, and it's about the drought. I just want to ask if there's any strategy to help our informal businesses in this, this informal business has failed because of the drought. Is there any financial help or any help that we can save them from failure? That's one part of the question. The other question is, and are you going to give finance to the informal traders via the, market? You're going to give them a sort of a credit card so that they can buy fresh produce from the market to sell. But what about the informal traders that buy direct from the farmers? How are we going to help them financially? And then you also talk in this presentation about affordable interest rate. And I just want to know from you, what do you think is affordable? Percentage-wise, is it 10%, 2%? What is this affordable rate? And then also, does CIFA know where all this informal traders are? Which province, which town? Where are they? Because today you will see Omar sitting next to the shop selling bananas, and tomorrow that same Omar will sit at the other address selling goods. So how are we going to do you know where is all our informal traders? And that is about the failure, the failure of our businesses. The second question, Madam Chair, Elna gave us a presentation about a year ago, and CIFA was supposed to give us some finance to start that. I think it was a business in Middelburg, in Mpumalanga. I just want to get some feedback from CIFA if her application was approved and if she's successful or whatever. Thank you, man.
All right,
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. My first question is whether the department, CIFA in particular, has got good strategies of making sure that the AG supports the cautioning from the AG in order to retain these unqualified daters. Have you got strategies to make sure that you don't fall into them, into a pit, because once you make a mistake and fall into that unqualified, I mean into the qualified disclaimers, etc., to come out of there is a mammoth task. So as a new department, as a new CIFA, have you got good strategies to stay afloat? And then the second question is, in view of that, though, there is that area that Mr. Makuba, you reported that the funds are being gradually cut, not gradually, actually, radically, as we go down the years. But when we talk of the jobs created, it looks like we are still positively saying the jobs that will be created are reasonably stable. Can you comment on that? Because I have expected that if we are looking just at that funding, with the narrowing, the slopes, the rush, the very acute slope, going down slope, then it will mean the jobs created in that area will also go down, so that we don't have those expectations whilst the tools inform otherwise. And then the last one is when are intermediaries also playing a role in your mechanisms of getting funds to the end users, and if they are, what percentages are they going to charge to the cooperatives as well as the LMMEs? The very last one is, do we have a feel that CIFA is going to serve, amongst others, that mother that is selling apples along the street, that mother that that's selling meal, and that just has one box of tomatoes, but that mother is not alone. If you multiply her, she is all over the country. So do you have a feel that she will be well served? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mawuti.
Thank you, Chairperson, and welcome the presentation by the CEO. Your corporate plan is very, very organized, more especially when you were trying to align it with the strategic plan of the department. But I have some questions to ask Chairperson. It's about the budget. Do you think the budget which is allocated for you, is it enough to radically transform maybe the small businesses and the cooperatives in a general term? Because remember, the small businesses and the cooperatives, it has been tasked to contribute about 90% of job employment and they will pay to someone. So if you can make a breakdown, do you think as a CIFA to financially support the small business and business, how far are you going to create such dream of everybody up to 90% to be in a conducive employment environment with the budget you have been given? Or if the budget is not enough, you tell us about that. If the budget is also a challenge. And the question is, do you or are you trying to pursue to get maybe some donation or grant from the international structures like the United Nations, the African Union, or some countries maybe which can sympathize with us to inject funds to CIFA in order to achieve its objective, yes. Page 53, you were talking about the priority of the provinces, but you said you exclude the Western Cape and Gauteng province and KwaZulu-Natal. But I think for KwaZulu-Natal, you might be wrong, except if maybe you can do a research to support you. Because KwaZulu-Natal, the first area is still the rural area. And maybe 15% of that KwaZulu-Natal is the only one which is maybe the urban area. But I'm sure of about more than 70% of the KwaZulu-Natal, the people who are very poor and who are living in the rural area. And the majority, the population there in KwaZulu-Natal is very, very high than all the provinces. So I think maybe you can do a research about it, not to exclude even to cities like Gauteng province and Western Cape. The loan interest, the loan which you are giving to the small business in the co-op, we just want to know the exact interest do you charge to those people when they back the money to the CIFA and the challenges you are meeting in order to for the payment back of the money, and what are the remedies and the strategies to repay the money if people are not bringing back the money so that the distribution must be sustainable. And do you have maybe investment if you have extra fund, like the fund you were given by them? You said DTI, not DTI, this IDC. They gave you a grant about up to about a billion, 800 and something, a million. And you are not using it. You are going to start to use it, I think, on the coming financial year, or 2018, somewhere there. So where do you put that money? When you have a money up to a billion, do you invest it so that meantime it must be incurring interest, or do you invest it on, why don't you invest it maybe like building a mall, properties which can regain back the money to the institution in order to have more cash which will help the people, rather than keep just the money for years without doing it. But if it's there, it's making interest, you will explain to us. I think Chairperson, those are the few clarities question I'm asking.
Hello, Richard.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. McCuba, for your presentation. I want to just focus on the strategic plan of the committee, and point three is outcome-orientated goals and strategic objectives. And I'd like to ask the CEO if he could just think about the vision of CIFA, the mission of CIFA, in those terms. One of the key performance indicators that we put into our plan was that by 2019, South Africa was ascend to the top of the general board by for sub-Saharan African countries. In other words, we've moved from virtually at the bottom in the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor report to the top, and that would require quite a systemic change in the way in which small businesses are operating in this country. Obviously, in the way in which people view themselves as potential entrepreneurs, the failure rate of the entrepreneurs, etc., etc. And I'd be interested to hear Mr. Makuva's views on whether you think that that is something that could impact on your own planning and strategic thinking. The next thing is, if we think about outcomes, I mean, essentially, in the bigger scheme of things, in the macro economy, CIFA is an economic development agency. It is an agency which is, or should be, focusing on the economic development of South Africa, specifically through the vehicle of small business cooperatives. So then, what are the measures of economic development? Job creation is certainly one of them, but what are the value add, in the broader sense, of CIFA to the GDP, for example, the local economy? How do you measure that? And I haven't seen any movement at all in CIFA's thinking around this since we first met you almost 2 years ago. And I think we have been making this point repeatedly. The measures that are being adopted by CIFA are still too narrow, and they're not looking at CIFA's role as an economic development agency. So I'd like your thoughts on that. And something else which also is extremely revealing is that if you look at the cost per job created, it varies from the lower end of the scale, around about 900 rand per job created, 951 rand, in fact, if you look at the micro-enterprise financing, through to 260,000 rand per job created at the higher end of the scale. Now, that's an enormous market in which we play. I mean, it's not a market, it's a vast spread, if you like. And that essentially requires a completely different mindset as to how you are, you know, what are you doing in this economy to really make an impact. And then not only is it the cost per job created, it's the number of jobs created per enterprise funded. And I remember in the very first meeting that we had when you were presenting to the Economic Development Committee, before we were even formed as a committee, I asked that question. How can you justify spending hundreds of millions of rands on funding a business which only creates 1.5 jobs? And we're not even sure whether that is a new job. And you're not sure either. Because you say, either sustaining existing jobs or creating new jobs. So, you know, on the other hand, some of your other interventions are creating 4 to 5 jobs per enterprise funded. How much are those jobs paying? Are some of the jobs paying 1,000 rand a month? Are some of them paying 20,000 rand a month? You know, these are factors which are critically important, because that then comes to the total value added that you are contributing to the economy. Because obviously the higher the paying the job, the more that person is able to spend in the local economy, generating a multiplier effect. So I think there's still a lot of work that has to be done in terms of your fundamental thinking about what is the purpose of this agency. And I think that you need to be engaging with some development economists around what actually is the business of CIFA. Now, if you look at your balanced scorecard, 50% of your balanced scorecard is on the disbursement of loans. 27% is on the financial rectitude of your organization. So in other words, you're being evaluated in terms of dishing out money, not on your ability to recoup it. So, you know, again, that's your mandate, you know, and essentially what you're saying is that you're dishing out money, but you cannot evaluate your full return on that money unless you look at the bigger economic impact. Because if you are spending taxpayers' money, so 300 billion rand a year, and you are generating a couple of billion rand in economic value added, then we say, fine, that's probably quite a good return. But what is that return? you need to understand the return in the broader context of the economy. And I seriously believe that unless SIPA is able to do that, then it calls to question your raison d'etre. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Labour.
Now, thanks, thank you for the presentation from SIFA. I've just got one comment. It's on the people living with disability. I'm just a bit worried with people living with disability because they seem to be neglected. What is your plan? What criteria are you going to use to raise them? Because I believe they've got structures that are preventing them in municipalities, local municipalities and districts. Are you aware of those structures? That is one. Number two, I was looking at your presentation and the pilot project that you mentioned and Mangaung. I was very much interested to see those pilot projects, but I would be very happy to see them going to rural areas. You mentioned the bakeries and those boiled chickens and other stuff. I would be very happy if you can take it to the rollout to the rural areas, because I think it will assist the growth and the employment in our area. I think those are the two features I just wanted to mention. Thank you very much.
I also have my own question. In the presentation of the department yesterday, there was a focus on outcome number 4 and outcome number 5 of the medium-term strategy framework. Then, in the plan of SIFA, although there is alignment in terms of the key performance areas, but when it comes then to the targeted areas, there is a mismatch. In the sense that the medium-term strategic framework is focusing on, the department is saying we are focusing on outcome number 4 and outcome number 7. And outcome number 7 is rural areas. Okay. And then SIFA, who has them to provide the financial support and target areas that need that support? Is then presenting a strict plan that says we will be working in Mangaung, a big city with revenue base. We will also be working in Durban, another big city, metro with revenue base. Young family. And then the SIFA goes on to say we will exclude in scouting the Western Cape in our approach. But in Western Cape, the advocate of poverty. That then brings me to the first question is, are you biased towards the rural municipalities with no revenue base? And you are also talking about the fresh produce market that are going also to be used to give loans to people that are buying. And we have been to KwaZulu-Natal and we found Ugu Fresh Produce Market, a facility that was built at a cost of 27 million. When we visited this, it was used as a motor repair by Ugu. And the reason for that was, as much as it was built to provide the facility for emerging farmers, primary cooperatives to have pickles and distribute to the market, the absence of primary cooperatives forced the municipality to rent that facility out to Isuzu, because if it was not, that was not done, it was going to be vandalized. It is very close to an informal settlement. And this year we visited Vembe Fresh Produce. Vembe is the same. We found a one tractor kept in there, and we were informed that that facility was built during the Homeland government, and then the Democratic government revamped that facility using 9 million rands. The municipality is paying employees there. And the plan there is that that fresh produce market would not sell to the street vendors that you are actually earmarking for funding. Its plan is saying they want to sell to Johannesburg market and the Pretoria market. But again, in Limpopo, there are three military bases. And we've had a presentation here by the Department of Defense, and there is this issue of transversal agreements and the government opening the market itself as a sustainable market for SMEs and cooperatives. And then the question that I want to ask is that relates to that is this plan, together with the plan of the Department of Small Business, aligned to the plan of the Department of Rural Development in relation to the initiatives of the agri-parks, as well as the revival of the fresh produce market by the municipalities, because both OCO is talking about reviving that, and it is also in the plan of KwaZulu-Natal that each and every district municipality must have a fresh produce market, because KwaZulu-Natal's national social development perspective is saying agriculture is what will grow the economy in KwaZulu-Natal, and then it becomes specific in terms of which district we will be good for that, which is what the Department of Rural Development then is having this agri-parks that's identified. Then in terms of this, the description of the portfolio committee, we are looking at an integrated development approach. So the point that I'm making is, was this strategic plan of the department and that of SAFER developed in an integrated development planning approach, informed by the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act number 13 of 2005, or that act was ignored? And if did you take into consideration that act and the integrated development learning process that takes place at a district municipality level, as well as at metro level? The point I'm making is, when both the departments were developing these plans, did they develop them having task base with the targeted areas, knowing what is being planned in Ubu, knowing what is being planned in Zembe, knowing what is being planned in Krisiane, or the department planned with its entities in Pretoria, ignoring that there is an integrated development planning process that takes place at district municipalities. I'm also asking that in relation to the coordination mandate of the department, as well as championing development of SMEs and cooperatives. If the department does not interface at those levels, how would then the department influence the Department of Rural Development, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Water Affairs, the Department of Transport, the district, the local municipality, which has got a responsibility of zoning areas? How does that get coordinated? That then takes me to the other instrument that this department is given in order for it to be able to champion and coordinate. It's given the power to sign transversal agreements, which means that in a strike plan of the department and a strike plan of SIFON, we should also be seeing what other resources would be coming and where would those resources be coming from. They were entered into a transversal agreement with the Department of Rural Development. This is their contribution that they will be making, so that we can see that this plan is a realistic and achievable plan. There will be no gaps, because all departments that are supposed to be playing a role will be playing a role. It will not be a guesswork. The same way that we knew during 2010, preparing for 2010 World Cup, we knew what role was going to be played by the Department of Transport, how many airports were going to be upgraded, how many park and ride areas were going to be built, what was going to be the role of the metros, how many public viewing centers were going to be made available, and who are going to be responsible for building those. Can we see the same kind of planning in the development of SMEs and cooperatives, to know exactly what role will be played by whom and what resources will be provided? I also don't see there is a missing vocabulary in all the plans, the prioritization of residential poverty nodal points. These nodal points were declared in 2001, and it has never been said that they are no longer a priority for development. Instead, there is emphasis in terms of inequalities. Inequality actually means that there are developed areas in South Africa and there are underdeveloped areas in South Africa. And underdeveloped areas in South Africa are as a result of silo planning and also focusing on certain communities in the exclusion of other communities. So it's not by default. It was a plan structured and aimed at perpetuating a particular kind of an economy in South Africa. And radical economic transformation seeks to address that. The land use patterns of the apartheid system, and also the neglect of other areas in terms of development. And if we are not looking at that, we will then continue to focus on areas that are already developed. Then the other point that I want to make is that those presidential poverty nodal points are the very same areas where the NDP specifies that there is poverty, there is unemployment, and there is inequality. The last point that I want to make is, are these prioritized projects related to the national spatial development perspective of each area? Meaning that it is projects that, when they are being assessed, when you are assessing the application, you would be knowing that it is important to respond to this project because it addresses, it relates to the national spatial development perspective of the area. So in other words, it's not initiated, it's not just a project that is initiated by the project owner, but it also relates. When I say the project owner, I mean the SNME and the cooperative that put an application. But that person does know the national spatial development perspective of the area, which may result with the project not actually succeeding on the basis of the fact that it looked as a very good business plan, but it does not relate to the national spatial development perspective of the area, and as a result, other departments and other spheres of government that are supposed to provide infrastructure and all other things that are needed in order for that project to succeed will not be in their priority because that project does not relate to the national spatial development perspective. So I just wanted to get a sense of it. Do we take all these things into consideration or we respond to projects that are coming to us having not interacted with other spheres and other sister departments at national as well as the other spheres of government? And the last point is where do we put the private sector here in relation to the support that would be required from the private sector? You see, when you look at the marketing, there is the Inaveto that talks about the product, the price, place, and the promotion. And then there is the outer level. The inner circle is the controllable sector, and the outer circle of marketing is uncontrollable. And the uncontrollable relates to government policy, but it also relates to the role that is played by other players. And in most cases, the developed business sector play the role in terms of access to raw materials and the competition and all those things that would affect the inner circle of the small business that is developing. Yeah. Honorable Scott.
Thank you, Chair. First, I felt disabled by the fact that I missed yesterday's meeting. But now I feel that I must live with this disability. Mm-hmm. And some of the questions have been passed. One, when you opened chair, you mentioned the need of understanding the alignment between the entity program and this one of the department. And that is one area which took me to the question of whether in the preparation of this presentation was it done take into account what you say, that it is addressing that misalignment of the programs. That is one. Therefore, that will take us to whether the questions I've been referring to, am I supposed to refer them to the department or to the entity? Because I don't want to make a mistake. And there is this thing, some people say you shoot the messenger when you start doing the message. So I want to be clear that this area I'm asking is supposed to be the department that is answering it, or is supposed to be the entity. Because I've under the impression that the entity is fits hands, eyes and ears of the department in the implementation of the finance part. But now there are some questions which were tough, such as the one which my colleague, Honorable Jones, said, mentioned, the one of the drought. I wanted to know whether this animal which is threatening our country has got no effect on the programs, and if so, what are the ways of addressing it? Then the next one, I think it's more of an input also, the one of the other sister, if it's not a brother, the entity sister. We are aware that it exists, we are working together, working together with it, but I would like the strength of identifying how you relate and how you interact with them to an extent that you justify your existence, despite their existence, including highlighting the areas of interaction and cooperation. Because I think it is important for you as the entity to justify that you have to be there. Whether there's either, there must be no one who must find one day, say, no, there's overlap here, ABC, because of this and that. You justify your existence. And so this area should never remain grey. It must have always be elevated the needs of this part, this entity as finance part of the department. Now on this part also of the Western Cape and Gauteng, but mainly I was concerned about the Western Cape, because I was just wondering whether it is not possible that in these wineries in Western Cape, are there no possibility of smaller cooperatives which would be somehow be part of the bigger of the wine producing areas? Because as she was saying, as our families were saying, that there will be poverty in all the provinces, and therefore maybe there should be no reason of excluding the poor in another province if it is possible to identify. And also, that also should also elevate these areas of poverty, unemployment, and inequality, because I can assure you that it is as areas we are addressing. But to me, it's very important that these areas, since they are key areas in the development of the country and in the economy, you make someone feel that you are part of them, you are addressing them, because those are the things which will always make you relevant. Then now the other thing then, which also I was it would be interesting to me, is only that some of the things when you are a latecomer, you will miss other things which you have gone through, but the opinions or the experience, your experiences with the Auditor General, whether it has always been, you didn't have any challenges, or if you are in your performance, you are improving, or what is the opinion of the Auditor General in your performance, because those are other things which you judge in the process. And also now, which is important, is one of the jobs that we are creating. It's also nice or easier or entice some people when these jobs you put in the sense of percentages, that this is the contribution of percentages, because it's always measured that the percentage of unemployment is at this stage now, but any contribution towards resolving that, it would make sense. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
No,
of course.
Chairman, mine is very short on page 8 of the presentation. The indicating of SMEs and cooperatives, I'll be very much happy if the numbers were divided to indicate how many cooperatives, unlike the way they are standing now, that it can be this big number, but the weight of this big number is on SME. The cooperatives are very few. In terms of that, if we are two, and also the indication of the geographical spread of these cooperatives, if they are there. Thank you, sir.
What we are expecting to happen is that both CIFA and the department will respond, because the questions that are being asked for both, because CIFA is an entity that provides finance, meaning that it is an enabler to the implementation of the plan of the department. Therefore, both the department and CIFA will respond to questions.
Okay, I'll kick off. And as thank you for the questions. And as I listened, I was taken back to the outcomes of our program review and the recommendations. One of the recommendations and areas of work is a clearer demarcation, if you wish, but certainly a clearer articulation of the roles of the department and that of the entity. And one of the things that the department has to do is to provide policy leadership and direction. And therefore, one of the policy questions, for example, the question which you raised, Chair, has CIFA, is this plan of CIFA's aligned to that of the Department of Rural Development and the 44 agri parks, etc. Now, I don't know that it is appropriate for, or that it should be necessary for each of our entities to be interacting with different departments in pursuit of the IGR obligations which you remind us of. And it would seem that that is part of the role of the national department. Because both that question of alignment to rural development, and there was another one, the issue on drought, for example. Those are areas which we deal with in the economic cluster. Unlocking the potential of small, medium and micro enterprises, the informal sector, cooperatives, township and rural enterprises is one of the pillars of the 9-point plan, as agri-parks, as the revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing is a pillar. And in that context, both the question pertaining to the drought and the question pertaining to the agri-parks, etc., that is where it comes up. And what we do in that forum is, even though we report to Cabinet on this unlocking of the potential, we don't we drive it. We're the leaders as the Department of Small Business Development. But we are not the only people. We have to bring together the whole of government around that. In the same way as the Department of Agriculture, as the lead department on the revitalization pillar, has to bring together all departments. And I believe that we therefore have to give the policy direction to CEDA and CIFA. So, and it is, and one must be absolutely frank, because I think some countries will give an answer and go around the corner. We've not had that conversation. We've not had that conversation with CIFA and CEDA where we can say, this is where we are with the 9-point plan. This is what is required. This is how we will do the integrated planning and targeting. But it certainly is something that we will do going forward. If we relate it then to the department's own strategic plan, you recall that yesterday there were three targets where he said, we have set a target to develop a framework for integrated planning with national departments. Integrated planning and monitoring and targeting with national departments in terms of their mandates. And with provincial departments and with local governments. So that these three separate streams of work, but ultimately my sense is that is something we will do this year, and we will by next year this time have that IGR framework of how we are going to do it. On the question of I think have we arrived at our plans in consideration of the IGR framework, and I think you have mentioned that before as well, have we touched base with district municipalities? We've also proposed we should be having transversal agreements with district municipalities. No, we have not engaged with district municipalities, and we simply do not have the capacity to do that. And I am not sure, Chair, and I know you have a very strong view on it, but I'm not sure that CIFA at CEDA, as a department, should be engaging each of the municipalities. When there is a department of local government, cooperative governance, when as a national department, we must find a way of working with the, and not overstepping the mandate of particular departments. I don't know that we've got the capacity to be able to do that. Certainly, our approach to our work, and we've said this and quite confident about it, when we go into any province, we as a rule, Minister will engage the MEC for Economic Development, I will inform the HOD for Economic Development, as well as the HOD, the DG of the Department of. This is what we can do. We don't parachute in and parachute out. So your expectation of our plan should have been done in consultation with the district municipalities. We have not done that. We don't have the capacity to do that, and I don't know whether I've indicated what our plans are for the year. But I think the point I'm driving is we've got to do the policy. We've got to enter the entities, the policy directions, and the funding to be cost-effective, I believe, for both CIFA and CEDA and ourselves to be out there. But certainly, as one of the honourable members said, the entities on our hands and feet.
I think that when we respond to questions, we must also reflect on what we have said in the past so that you don't contradict yourself. You presented to us a threat plan that has got the core location. The core location relates to CIDA and CIFA coming together and also ensuring that on their footprint where they are also working closer with the LED programs of municipalities. So when I was a deputy mayor. In all the IDP forums, there was a CEDA and a FIFA representative. And there was an office of CEDA in Ogu District Municipality. There is no law in terms of planning integrated planning forum, in the integrated planning forum. Entities are welcome to come there, even members of the public, even NGOs, because that is where the plan that will be adopted by the municipality, the integrated plan will be adopted. That is where it happens. So when we are talking about CEO, I'm not talking about the CEO. You can check all the attendance registers of district municipalities. Those structures will be represented, but the shortcoming will be they will come there and sit, find the register and then nothing. Because there has not been coordination on how to do the actual planning. So we cannot have a policy in place that says planning has to happen at this level, and then we have a DG that says we can't participate in that session. So in our strike plan, that is what we want to see happening. We want to see the implementation of the intergovernmental relations framework, and we want to see the integrated planning happening, and happening at where it is supposed to happen. And co-location, we have said several times in this meeting that the co-location to us is not about CIFA and CEDA coming together. It is also appreciating that there is a local economic development program at a municipality level. And development happens at a municipality level. Each and every cooperative that is registered, there is an address. And the address points to a ward that belongs to a municipality. And we cannot ignore that. So our responses must not be the responses that are defending positions. There must be responses that are beginning to realize that we have a shortcoming, and then let us develop a strategy to do that and address that issue.
Chair, I thought that is what I was saying. I said we don't have the capacity to be engaging each and every municipality. We have set a target to develop a framework for how we will interact and plan together with municipalities. And I said we also will work through and respect the mandate of the specific department who's doing that work as well. And just before you stopped me, I was coming to a point that was made by one of the honourable members, which said that we have CEDA, a CIFA, who are on the ground, and they are our eyes and feet and ears on the ground. And therefore, in doing that, and where they are located, the kind of services that are...
That's why I intervened, because your first statement was saying you don't think that it is the responsibility of CIFA and CEDA to intervene at that level. And I listened and took notes of what you were saying. And I then had to intervene so that you could then respond with an understanding of the fact of what happened at a district level when planning is taking place and what happened at a metro level when planning is taking place. Because the issue here, which has been making government waste money, is failure to plan together. Departments planning in silos. And their entities, even CEDA and CIFA, were not meeting before the committee directed them to meet. Last year we had to send them back because CEDA came here
and contrast that what we are going to present to you is not known by the department, and the departments are the same. SEWA itself said the same, and we had to chase the back and say, go and align your plans. Now we are on the second phase of doing that. Don't only align your plans, taking into consideration that there is a policy of the country, the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, Act number 13 of 2005, and there is an integrated planning forum that takes place, and we all know where that takes place. So, I'm saying that let us talk about what we are going to be doing, and not what we have been doing, because our role here is to ensure that policies of government that exist are adhered to, because they are not there just as policies. They are there to facilitate a new way of doing things.
Chair, I will let that point go. I'll just let it go. On the issue of the drought, I think what jumped at me from, because I think the same question was raised yesterday, and I don't know whether SEPA has a particular response to that, but again, I think in the cluster where we work as one government and find solutions as an economic cluster, certainly we've all been required in this water and sanitation and agriculture and rural development to lead that response. And I must say, we did not engage at the level of the, and the support went to the to primary agriculture and the impact that the drought has on primary agriculture, but not the secondary effects at all, not at that level. What many of the questions point to is issues that we have to, as the executive, for the department who is the executive authority, it points to the issues that must be on the agenda of our quarterly meetings. One thing that must go onto the agenda of the quarterly meetings, and that we probably should be reporting routinely on when we come to the committee, is how we deal with the findings of the audit agenda. Certainly from our perspective, I think we have said it in one of the hearings, we come from a department, or it's linked from a department that is one of the better performing departments in terms of governance. I mean, DPI has had an unqualified audit report, and this current year though, we have benefited from their systems. So we cannot say that we didn't know any of those things when we come from that school. And certainly for us, it is a standing item when we meet with each other in order to engage with the risks and engage with the findings. In fact, we have worked very closely with the AG, which actually helped us in determining our strategic risks for our department. The AG has said to us, they have worked with some of the other new departments like EDD when it was established in the Department of Women, and could point us to particular risks that face all departments and the risks that face new departments in particular. So I think that just to go on the moment, to say that we are very alive to that, and certainly a goal that we've set for ourselves that is in our corporate plan is to sustain that record of an unqualified audit report. Maybe those were the and on the question of the Honourable Kapa, on the how do we justify our existence and the reference to the sister entity, I think one of the matters that we have taken note of, and we haven't got the designed active project around that yet, is firstly that I think there was statements both in the 2016 SONA and in the budget speech about rationalizing entities, and that proposal has come out in this committee also, shouldn't we be rationalizing CIFA and CEDA? We haven't done that work on it. There's also the issue linked to that of CIFA, the enabling legislation, the independent legislation for CIFA, separate from that as a subsidiary of the IEC. And so I think we are required in terms of that policy position on SOEs and state-owned entities and the work around DSIs to look at that. To get, it's not, I think, something that the entity can decide whether it should be rationalized. It's a broader discussion which the executive authority should be leading. But what I'm assured of is the efforts of CEDA and CIFA on the ground, where they have their co-location points to in fact give clients that one-stop shop service. I think the CEO has talked, and I'll stop my interest there, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you, DG, for the response from of the questions raised. Some of the points that were raised, I take as input that we'll take into account as we move forward. And I must say that some of the activities that were incorporated as part of this corporate plan also arise, and among others, from the learning as we interact with the committee as indicated at the beginning. So I take some of the points that have been raised here, but we take it as a learning curve to be able to really help us to improve activities. I think maybe our thinking might have been not to a great extent, but I think there is room for us to learn as we move forward. So I really take most of the points that have been raised as input for us to build on as we progress. There was a specific question if CIFA has got a strategy around the drought that is affecting the country. We do not have the specific strategy around the drought per se. Although if clients are looking for funding for business, either they want to grow and expand or to address some of the challenges, we take it just like any normal funding, but we don't have a specific drought strategy or program at this stage. There was a question also if we fund directly to those that are buying from the farmers. What I highlighted was just some of the activities that we do through the produce market, for example. However, it doesn't preclude any entrepreneur who's looking for funding from our institution, whether they buy directly from the farmers or not. We are accessible to all. We look at it on each case, its own individual. This is just one program that we have, but we don't preclude. When I mentioned about the affordable interest rate, maybe particularly with regard to the informal sector, I will just give an example with regards to the what we do with the arrangement with we have with the food produce market in terms of what we are investing. Ordinarily, some people cannot be able to go to the food produce market and buy on a credit because they don't have a built-in a credit profile with the food market. So for us to introduce this program, particularly through our arrangement on the program of the credit indemnity, any trader can be able to go and buy on credit, 60 days. If they do not default, basically there is it's your interest rate. That's what I mean. If they don't default, because it's a credit. It's access to credit, the ability for them to go and buy, and will then be able to indemnify the market. So in that instance, with regards to the this program will be basically a zero rate, because it's them having access. It's not like they're saving the loan per se. They are going, they're able to go and buy on credit and then pay over a certain period. This is just one part of the problem. But however, with regard to our normal funding activities, our interest rates are hovering about 13.7% on the direct lending, 13.7% in terms of the interest rate that we charge under our normal business. I must say we have a high level of appetite in terms of risk. We do not require collateral. We do not require owner contribution. And then for us to be able to cushion the risk, we believe that the price that we charge is affordable in terms of from a direct lending point of view relating to specific question. Traders, I think, do we know where the traders are? I think this is more that needs to be done. We need to go out there. We need to go out there and interact as we do from time to time. But I think there is definitely a need for us to do more in that respect. I mean, we have got problems that we have identified for the traders in various provinces, in the Northern Cape and other provinces that we have identified, but we continue to really go and engage with them. I'll just ask my colleague Rian just to briefly respond on the Elna's question. Rian?
Honourable Chairman, we have engaged with Elna extensively together with our sister institution, CEDA. We assisted her with the development of a business plan. The big challenge relates to market access. She initially wanted to order or export relatively low-value products to Mozambique, which was not found to be viable. She wanted to set up a factory on the back of one specific contract. And at this point in time, she is, together with CEDA, still engaging to see how they can get a market access opportunity for her. It would be irresponsible for her just to start competing with the current hardware stores in that area. So it is unfortunate. We dealt with her extensively. Unfortunately, what has happened is now the macroeconomic conditions have changed in terms of the steel commodity challenges and the construction sector, which are highly linked to. So we have not funded it yet, but I believe she's still engaging with CEDA to search for solutions.
Can I also add on that, on that issue? When we interacted with the retail sector, what they appreciated from the initiative of the portfolio committee was that it opens an opportunity for the department and its entities to know what is needed by the retail sector before production starts. Because in the past, what small businesses would do is that they would decide on the product that they would want to produce. Having not done the market research and understood who is the actual customer and what does the customer want to buy. And the retail sector was saying to us, we are not the end user of the product. So we don't buy what is presented to us by small businesses and cooperatives because we don't buy goods to give. We buy it to sell. So we are also customer driven. And what is lacking in all the services that are being offered by the department, CEQA and CEDA, is market research services for small businesses and cooperatives. It's not there. And market research is actually the most important thing that makes a business to succeed. Funding a cooperative or an SME without a guaranteed and sustainable market is like throwing money, which is what we need to be actually examining when we are talking about the 88% failure rate and 40% failure rate. The same applies to Montwenhle. One of the challenges for Montwenhle is not only funding, but it is the raw material supply. A guaranteed raw material supply to produce a product. It depends on cocoa, chocolate. And then, which a farmer in South Africa is producing cocoa? You remember the uncontrollable factors of the marketing mix, the outer circle. If that is not so, that is where actually the department and the elites are supposed to be playing to mitigate those factors that are uncontrollable by the small business. It's the policies of the country. It's the raw material supply. It's the trading laws with other countries. That is where you're supposed to be playing. But I realized when I raised that issue of marketing that it was misconstrued to mean marketing the department, whereas I was talking about the marketing service offered to SMEs and corporates, because they will not be able to do the market research and understand who their competitors are. And it is one of the issues that both the department and its entities need to be looking at in terms of the incubation that is required for SMEs and there are very few people who want to take that project of marketing. And it has never appeared in any of the documents that say one of the things that we do as CEDA or as the department ourselves is to provide market research. We analyze the market for SMEs, so that we are then able to advise that not this particular product, but this one. And who is the actual, you will be competing with, and what are the strengths of the people that you will be competing with, and who are the people that you need to support you in order for you to succeed. Which then comes to the issue of funding a value chain instead of funding a cooperative or an SME, because whether you can give that person, if the success depends on the one who has to supply the raw material, then that business will fail, because the raw material supplier is not funded simultaneously. Which is why I like this model of the fresh produce being a secondary cooperative, because if the fresh produce is used as a secondary cooperative, which is responsible for marketing, it is at that level that then an expert with marketing expertise who would then navigate and the environment. And even those that are going to be producing and plowing, they will be told what to plow. I saw another very interesting project of the Department of Agriculture in KwaZulu-Natal, funding one cooperative, saying they are going to support one cooperative that is going to produce 1 million heads of cabbage. And this cooperative called me, and then I asked the question, who is the market for 1 million heads of cabbage? It's a very good thing to make, because what will then be the key performance indicator of the official in the Department of Agriculture is the funding of a cooperative that is going to produce 1 million heads of cabbage. And what will happen to those 1 million heads of cabbage if there is no market for that? What informs
that kind of a project, but it's a project that is approved by department. It's good for the official to get the bonus. It sounds also well for the cooperative that is going to be receiving feed, fertilizer, and assisted with the tractor, diesel, but all those cabbages will rot because there will be no market for 1 million heads of cabbage. So it's very, very important. Are there other questions that you still need to respond to? I just wanted to get into that because we have to discuss these things thoroughly.
Okay, I'll just try to, I mean, others have been here highlighted. I'll just try to cover as much as possible where I can. There was a question relating to the AIDA report. I take comfort that since the existence of the institution, we have received a clean report, unqualified audit with the minimal finding, adverse finding. And then we are continuously working in terms of that, in terms of how we manage our finances, how we manage our activity, our process and system. We believe that we are definitely going to be able to remain with a qualified clean audit going forward. The question relating to, I think Honorable Mabasa mentioned, there is a radical cutting of funds while the jobs remain the same. I must say, in terms of our partners, particularly those that have received funding from our institution over the number of years, the microfinance intermediaries in particular, we don't necessarily give them money all the time, but because they have received money from ourselves, as they tend that on a number of times so that they can be able to remain in terms of providing a support, which then result in creating jobs. So is the chain of the finances that we provided. The intermediaries in with regard to interest rate, the new breed of interest rate, I mean, for example, we have got one agency that we have collaborated with, which have given funding recently, the Echo Caesar Capital, they're paying all in costs about 20%. But the one that I mentioned previously, they are historical, they are not getting any new money from our institution, they just keep on turning on what we have provided, they still provide as they used to do previously. So we are looking at interest rates and about 20% with this capital, that's what we are contracted to, that they charge to the end user going forward. But the other ones that we discussed in this committee previously are historical, but they're not getting new money from our institution. They recycle what they received previously. There was a question relating to the issue of the budget. I know the fiscal rules in terms of the how we'll be able to transform radically the economy when the budget is dwindling. I think also some of the discussion that this committee, I think as we move forward, we will appeal for the committee to propose the vote for additional grant funding for us so that we can be able to do more in terms of activities. We are collaborating. That's why we are building a relationship with other international institutions where we can be able to collaborate in co-funding. There's a project that we work together with the International Labour Organization where we contribute some funding, but they come up with some business support funding in certain areas of activities. But we will look at other sources of income. So that we can be able to utilize it. I just want to clarify what I said about Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal on the corporate balance scorecard. The balance scorecard is only focused in terms of the measurement was relating to the priority provinces, which is all other provinces other than those three. But it does not mean we do not do work on this province. In fact, we have got a lot of work that we've done in Gauteng, for instance. But what the balance scorecard says is that we are doing a lot of activities in the areas like Gauteng, you must just get penalized so that you roll out your activities and do it in other rural provinces. But it does not mean preclude us from doing funding entities in this area, because we also believe there are rural areas largely in the provinces, the three provinces that I've mentioned. But for the purpose of the balance scorecard was to help us to focus more on the poorer areas of our country, so that we must only focus in the metro area.
Honorable Bewa and Mwabe
and myself come from KwaZulu-Natal. There are 11 districts, 10 districts and one metro. Nine are all prestigious for its not. In actual fact, the poorest ward in KwaZulu-Natal is ward 5 missing. So I don't know what the focus is of Kulumangai. And your offices and your services are not located in those districts municipalities. Even the small business development agencies established by MEC Mariakul has got offices in Mushang. So the point that we are making is that I appreciate the fact that we are here as public representatives and we come from those areas and allow a situation where we are able to give you information that will make you have more impact than you are currently having.
Thank you, Chief. I think one thing that we didn't do this time around, I think in our previous presentation we indicated a map in terms of the access point that we've identified that we want to penetrate into that aligned with the presidential notes. I think this time around, I think one of the time we do not have to take the point on the chairperson. The other question on the I think there was a question relating to what do we do with the people who have not paid? We send them letters of demand. If they don't respond within 14 days, we send them summons and we look in terms of legal action because people have to pay this so they can be able to do more in terms of funding other clients. I'm not in a position currently to respond on the GEM report. I think it's something that we can just really look at that. My colleague,
I'm sorry,
you will respond.
I want to take the second question first on the how do you measure the impact in relation to economic policy. I think that the work of CIFA must be seen in a longitudinal sense, that you must be able to measure a client over a period of time, and the impact which that client then do in relation to macroeconomic indicators. So where, for example, you can measure jobs, but you can measure jobs almost at three levels. You can measure jobs at firm level, and you can measure jobs in relation to what that job do to the income in terms of taxes. And another level, you can also measure jobs for jobs to livelihoods and family well-being. I think what CIFA wants to do is that it wants to set up a longitudinal project that begins to measure the impact of CIFA's funded clients to long-term outcomes with regards to the contribution to the fiscus in terms of tax, i.e. pay as you earn taxes while the company is taxed. But in that way, we can then begin to measure whether CIFA's funding has got a tax-neutral effect or whether it's got a tax-plus effect. From a personal point of view, if you start taking into account that CIFA funded, for example, in the last financial year, CIFA funded over 60,000 micro enterprises. These would be enterprises that would be trading in the informal sector. If you take a rough calculation, then we start saying that the average monthly income for an informal sector entrepreneur would be somewhere in the region of 2,200. Then you can begin to start calculating what would be the disposable income as well as the tax effect, calculating a 14% VAT income that's being accrued on that particular money, because most of those, while those informal trades might not pay formally via the tax system, they might be actually be paying VAT at the point of sale. And that is how the tax effectively gets calculated. And a company with a formal SME level on direct lending, the measurement would be the effect of the 8% tax. that is being paid by the company, which we measure by the company's tax clearance certificate effectively when the company starts paying. And that comes into our monitoring and evaluation system. But as I'm saying this, what we want to do is that we want to set up a longitudinal work that begins to start looking at the behavioral patterns of the companies in the economy so that we can effectively report back about the income of CIFA or the impact of CIFA. On the issue of GEMS, I think what GEMS is trying to do is trying to measure the ecosystem in the economy with regards to entrepreneurship. And those relates to both to hardcore infrastructure issues that relates to infrastructure, the macroeconomic stability, the educational infrastructure, as well as the entrepreneurial and innovation ability of the country. What I'm saying is that to set up the infrastructure which GEMS are referring to is we're really talking about an ecosystem that needs to be created. And I don't think it is a once-off activity because what you're being measured, you're being measured in terms of peer countries. Now, if, for example, if you start saying that South Africa's total early entrepreneurship activity, for example, in the last GEM report, was measured at something like 7.2%. The question that needs to be asked, I think, from all role players in the economy, it begins to start saying, how do we spin up entrepreneurial activity? CIFA sits with one activity of that, and that is entrepreneurial finance. The question that then needs to be asked is, that how do you, for example, align the education system? So that, for example, entrepreneurship becomes an avenue to pursue. How do you then create, for example, how do you deal, for example, effectively with macroeconomic conditions, which is effectively out of the control of CIFA? We don't control exchange rates. We don't control, for example, port charges. If you start there, you want to unpack those issues. So what I'm saying is that it's about the design of an ecosystem, which I think maybe the Department of Small Business has to almost engage and say that if we want to create, as the chairperson always reminds us about, the NDP target and the 700,000 jobs or 700,000 new enterprises that need to be created, how do you then, for example, create that ecosystem? That the ability of risk-taking, that the ability to be able to say it is good to create a venture, etc. That we actually see failure, for example, as a success. Because our society, our cultural norms, etc., go through the GEM study. All of those things that risk is talking against it. So we must, it's that ecosystem that needs to be designed. Sorry that I'm taking so long.
So, I'm happy with your response. Except for one thing, that's it. One measure should also be informed by the fact that South Africa has got two states, a welfare state for the poor and a developmental state for the rich. And the department has got a dual responsibility, meaning that even CIFA has got a dual responsibility. The dual responsibility is the development of SMMEs, which take capitalist form of development, because you will then be looking at the entrepreneur contributing to the 28% tax and the employee contributing to the 14% tax in terms of this. But on the side of the cooperative, that's not what you're only looking at. You're looking at how the cooperative contributes to the development of other members of the community that are underdeveloped. So you will come up with two different measures of the change that takes place. On the cooperative side, the profits get redeployed back to develop the community and open more job opportunities for the community, because the ultimate goal is to have a community that is socially and economically developed. They are able to do things for themselves. They can act the long run, even go to government and say, for this school to be built, we will contribute one rent and match that rent as government. Or the SMME side that doesn't have it. So, in addition to what you have said, we then need to be mindful of the fact that the mandate of this department is not only for SMMEs, it is also for cooperatives. And cooperatives are not capitalists, they are a social capital. Their main objective is to develop the community and reduce social problems in the community and
make the community more self-sufficient and self-reliant, then the community becomes to be partner with the government. So the tool of measurement is how you reduce the number of people that are sitting on the indigent register and the social grant register. So we will workshop this so that we can have an understanding of the difference between an SMME and a cooperative and what the country can achieve by investing more on cooperatives.
Okay, thank you very much. There's one quick one that I just want to also respond to. I think Honorable Mrawzi, on the question of the money from the IDC. The IDC money is sitting with the IDC. It's only going to be available on draw. So the first 80 million that when we need it, we'll then ask IDC please give us. So yeah, it's not sitting. They are not giving us money in advance. So as and when we want to draw, we'll get it. Honorable Chairperson, I think most of the points that have been raised, I take it as input for us to improve on our workings from time to time. I take it that, for example, the Honorable Chairperson did mention about the possibility for cooperative in the wineries in the Western Cape. I think that most of these are areas where we're really going to be looking at and how can we penetrate it in those areas. So I take largely them as input to improve our activities. And I thank you so much. I hope I will try to respond as much as possible for those specific ones, and then others I will take it as input. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see a lot of improvement from where you were last year. There is still a huge room for improvement. And I also like your attitude of saying that you take this engagement also as learning experiences. Some of the questions and the comments that are being made, you actually take them into consideration. And I can even see in your presentation that you have led by engaging with the portfolio committee. When we have completed our grant, this is still a draft, we will make copies available to Safeguard Leader and the department so that you can come here and negate the board much, knowing what kind of questions we will be asking you, so that you are not bound to one thing. We don't want to address each other in this meeting, but we want you to respond to issues that are of focus to us. We're not going to be asking you that question, and also we're not going to be asking you questions that do not have to do with the major fund expenditure framework. So it's better for you to know how we are going to be providing oversight on you, so that when you do your planning, then you align yourself with our thinking. Thank you very much. I take the meeting.